לתשומת ליבכם, התוכנית הבאה היא תוכנית מוקלטת, ועשויות להישמע במהלכה התראות והתייחסות לאירועים ביטחוניים שהראו בזמן שידורה הראשון. האזנה טובה.
Listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Saturday, April 20th, 2024. Good evening and Shabbat Shalom. This is Aryeh O'Sullivan with the news. We open with the fighting in the north. There were numerous alerts since this morning in the north of suspected infiltration of hostile aircraft and rockets, mostly in the Galilee Panhandle, and this evening in the western Galilee town of Shlomi in Mitzuba. At least one rocket hit was reported in an open area. There were no reports of any injuries or damage in all of the incidents. Hezbollah announced that it had attacked IDF forces in the border area. It also announced that two more of its fighters were killed in South Lebanon. The IDF has reportedly attacked targets in South Lebanon. This afternoon, reports from Lebanon say that three people were killed and two wounded in an IDF attack in the village of Al-Bain. Mayor of the northern frontier town of Metula, David Azulai, told Kan that yesterday two houses were damaged by anti-tank missiles fired at the town. There were no casualties. He estimates that about one-fifth of the evacuated residents would not likely return to Metula. The attack in Iran attributed to Israel. The New York Times has published satellite images purportedly indicating damage to an S-300 anti-aircraft battery deployed at an airbase in the Isfahan region close to the Natanz nuclear site. According to the Times, Israel launched at least one missile from a fighter jet far from the borders of Israel and Iran, which Iranian air defense systems could not detect. Israel has neither confirmed nor denied it carried out the attack. Western sources said it sent a message to Iran that Israel could strike anywhere it wanted to in Iran. Iran claimed last night that no damage had been caused in the strike. Iran's foreign minister told NBC News that the attacking drones were launched from Iranian territory and shot down several hundred meters later. He said they were more like toys than aircraft. He also said that the circumstances of the incident were still being investigated, but so far, no connection to Israel has been found. Meanwhile, there was an explosion at a military compound south of Baghdad. The Iraqi army announced that one person was killed and eight others were wounded in the explosion and the fire that followed. It said drones and aircraft had been detected in the area before the explosion. Previously, Israeli and American officials denied attacking the base where pro-Iranian militia operate. The militia chief warned that there would be a response against those responsible for the attack. And Jordan's foreign minister, Ayman Safadi, has said that his country will not serve as a battleground between Israel and Iran and will not allow either to violate its sovereignty and endanger its residents. In an interview with CNN, Safadi said that a message to this effect was conveyed even before the attack attributed to Israel in Iran. He added that the latest escalation does not serve either side. As to whether he thought Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wanted a broader war in the Middle East, the Jordanian foreign minister said Netanyahu could benefit from diverting attention from what's happening in Gaza. Well, despite his comments, Jordanian forces did participate in the interception of hundreds of drones and cruise missiles Iran fired last Sunday toward Israel, which passed through its territory. The fighting in the Gaza Strip. The IDF spokesperson says that in the past 24 hours, the Air Force has struck dozens of targets to assist the maneuvering forces on the ground. In the Beit Hanun area in the northern Gaza Strip, the pit from which a rocket was fired last night at the city of Sderot was destroyed. The rocket was intercepted and there were no casualties. Turkish President Recep Erdogan met in Istanbul with Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh and discussed with him the efforts to reach a ceasefire in Gaza and to transfer humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. The Anadolu news agency reported that Erdogan promised that Turkey would continue its diplomatic efforts to draw the world's attention to the oppression experienced by the Palestinians. Foreign Minister Israel Katz blasted Erdogan for his meeting with Haniyeh. Katz uploaded the photo of the two to his account on the X network and wrote, "The Muslim Brotherhood, rape, murder, desecration of corpses, and burning babies. Erdogan, be ashamed of yourself," Katz wrote. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal has reported that political leadership of Hamas is seeking to leave Qatar and that the organization's leaders have contacted at least two countries in recent days to check the possibility of moving their activities there. There were reports of violent confrontations between Jewish residents in Samaria and Palestinians near the village of Sabia, north of Nablus in the West Bank. The Palestinian Ministry of Health reports that a Palestinian paramedic was shot to death by Jewish settlers while evacuating injured from that conflict. Carnage on the roads since yesterday. Seven people have been killed on Israel's roads and six seriously injured in 26 serious road accidents. In one incident, two men in their 50s, one a volunteer policeman and the other a road worker, were killed when hit by a Jeep on the main Highway 1 between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. The men had been on the highway clearing a blockage set up by an illegal demonstration. Taking a look at the weather, and it will be cooler tomorrow, mainly in the hills and inner parts of the country. In the morning, slight drizzle in the north and along the coast. That's the news for this evening. Now over to our pre-recorded program.
You're listening to the English language news of Khan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
Good evening and welcome to our Saturday night program, recapping the top news stories we covered this week. I'm Ariel O'Sullivan. Let's get started. This week saw the unprecedented direct attack on the Jewish state by Iran when it launched over 330 rockets, drones, and cruise missiles at Israel. Nearly all were intercepted by the Air Force and allies, including the U.S., Britain, and Jordan. We examine that and other news. IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi said that Iran will face the consequences of its actions and Israel will choose its response accordingly. In an English-language statement released this week, Halevi thanked international partners who work with Israel in intercepting the Iranian aerial attack on Israel on early Sunday morning, an effort that the IDF had dubbed Operation Iron Shield.
Over the weekend, Iran launched a large-scale attack on Israel. Over 350 ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, armed drones, and rockets were fired from Iranian soil, as well as Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon, towards the state of Israel. Across the skies of the Middle East, a coalition was activated to counter this attack, marking the start of the IDF's Operation Iron Shield. The Israel Defense Forces, together with the United States Central Command, the British and the French Armed Forces, and other partners, operated together in real time, in the air, on the ground, and at sea. Defense systems were activated, the threats were intercepted, and Iran's attack on Israel failed. Operation Iron Shield proved the strength of our ironclad cooperation. I want to thank all our international partners who stood up to Iran's aggression. Iran's attack has created new opportunities for cooperation in the Middle East. We are closely assessing the situation. We remain at our highest level of readiness. Iran will face the consequences for its actions. We will choose our response accordingly. The IDF remains ready to counter any threat from Iran and its terror proxies as we continue our mission to defend the state of Israel.
IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi. In the U.S., White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby described the interceptions of the launches from Iran as an incredible military achievement by Israel as well as by the United States and its partners. Speaking with NBC's Meet the Press, Kirby said whether or how Israel responds is up to Israel. U.S. President Joe Biden has made it clear that the U.S. is not interested in an escalation in the region. He stressed that the U.S. will continue to help Israel defend itself.
Well, where things stand this morning is just an incredible military achievement by Israel and, quite frankly, the United States and other partners that helped Israel defend itself against more than 300 drones and missiles. I mean, it's just an extraordinary example of military superiority that Israel demonstrated to the whole world last night. And I think Israel also demonstrated that it has friends, that it's not standing alone, that it's not isolated on the world stage. Now, Whether and how the Israelis will respond, that's going to be up to them. We understand that and respect that. But the president's been very clear. We don't seek a war with Iran. We're not looking for escalation here. We will continue to help Israel defend itself.
Are you, as we sit here right now, aware of any threats to U.S. troops in the region?
We are staying vigilant to exactly that potential threat, but we have not seen any attacks on U.S. troops or personnel in the region or our facilities. Nothing to report to you this morning, but we're going to obviously watch that very, very closely.
Just to get a sense of how this came together, did the United States have any back-channel communications with Iran, if only to deconflict the airspace over Syria?
I would just, not in terms of the operations, but, I mean, obviously in the lead-up to what happened yesterday. I would just say we made it very clear to all parties, including Iran, what we would do and how we would continue to defend Israel, and also how seriously we would take any potential threat to our personnel and our facilities in the region.
A lot of people watched what happened in the skies over the Middle East overnight, and they are wondering this morning, has this now escalated into a wider war?
I don't think there's any reason that it needs to.
Are we now in the midst of a wider war?
The president doesn't believe that it needs to move in that direction whatsoever, Kristen. What Israel demonstrated last night was an incredible ability to defend itself. Just their own military superiority was quite remarkable yesterday. Very little got through, and the damage was extraordinarily light. And also, Israel demonstrated again, as I said, that they're not standing alone, that they have friends. So the president's been clear. We don't want to see this escalate. We're not looking for a wider war with Iran. The coming hours and days will tell us a lot.
White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby. The IDF released operational footage from the air defense's interceptions, including the interception of an Iranian UAV by Israeli fighter jets. Tal Inbar, a senior research fellow at Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, spoke with the Jerusalem Press Club about the types of weapons Iran directed against Israel. He noted that the use of drones in the first wave of the attack gave Israel time to prepare.
We saw several types of weapons operated by Iran, some ballistic missiles and cruise missiles. The exact model of those missiles is not yet known, at least not to the public, even though we saw some remains of Iran's liquid-propelled ballistic missiles. They look like some version of the Kayam missile, which is not the best missile that Iran possesses and not the newest one. And a huge barrage of Shahed 136 drones, the same model that is used by the Russians in Ukraine for the last, almost 2 years, slightly less, and perhaps some other models as well. But to coordinate such an attack is not an easy task because all three weapon systems has a different velocity and performance. So you have to launch in advance the UAVs, which are the slowest weapon that Iran used. Then the cruise missiles that uses jet engines. And finally, you launch the ballistic missiles with a relatively short flight time from Iran to Israel, depending on the launch site. So it was a coordinated attack, but because the Iranian chose to use the first wave of attack drones, we had several hours notice, so we could prepare ourselves to the maximum.
I understand, though, that unlike rockets and ballistic missiles, drones are they cannot be predicted because they fly slowly, but they can change course. So how was there intelligence on what the targets were of the Iranians, or it was just a wait-and-see approach and they intercepted them as they came?
Yeah, you cannot know in advance what are the targets for the drones, and you mentioned it correctly. Nevertheless, because of their low speed, you can engage them not only with active defense from the ground, like the Iron Dome, for example, but you can shoot them down using the Air Force of Israel or perhaps other countries in the region. And it was done several months ago by the Israeli Air Force. And this is not something new of how to mitigate this threat. And there is an advantage because the airspace was clear from Iran to Israel. No civil aviation active at the time for several hours before the incoming missiles and drones reached their target or the near Israel. So you had a clear sky to engage them over other territories. And we heard that the Jordanian Air Force, for example, was very active, as well as some U.S. Aircraft as well.
Considering the number of weapons used, does this cause any kind of dent in Iran's capabilities? The number is a fraction of what they have. Is it like a large amount of what they have?
You know, it's not a large amount of what they have. They have a lot more in every respect, not just more drones, but more ballistic missiles, more sophisticated missiles, more long-range and heavy warhead missiles. So on the other hand, you cannot say that it is only a small fraction. It's a healthy quantity of weapons. And I cannot recall any such a coordinated attack in that magnitude. So in that regard, it was unprecedented, as well as the success of the interception.
The interception was indeed remarkable. Can you elaborate on the methods used and also the forces that, like, how much of it was Israel, how much was its allies, which technologies were used?
Yeah, I can speak about the Israeli method of multi-layered missile defense. We had several layers of defense, starting from Iron Dome. Then we are going a little bit higher to David Sling, which was originally designed to cope with maneuverable missiles, heavy rockets, and cruise missiles. Then we have the Aero 2, which is operational for decades now, and Aero 3, which is the upper tier of the multi-layer defense system of Israel. And Aero 3 engages its target not only very high, actually, in space, but very far away from Israel. So even the remains of the incoming missiles are not supposed to fall in Israeli territory. And of course, you have to get the data on the trajectories of all the threats. So we have our radars. There are some other assets in the region, including what we saw in previous engagement with the Houthis, some assets on the ground in Saudi Arabia operated by the Saudis and operated by the U.S., and there are also naval ships with missile defense capabilities. Either the French Navy has some capabilities with Aster missiles, the Israeli Navy with the Sea Dome, and of course the United States with the Aegis ships. So all in all, it is a regional defense, not only Israeli capabilities. And you can add a little bit something else to the dish, if you will. You can add the capabilities of air forces in the region and, let's say, a modern fighter with air-to-air advanced air-to-air missiles could easily intercept incoming targets like drones and UAVs.
Talin Bar, Senior Research Fellow at the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance. Yigal Carmon, President and Founder of the Middle East Media Research Institute, Memory, and a former advisor on Arab affairs to two prime ministers, says that Iran pre-coordinated its attack against Israel with the United States so that no one would be hurt and war with Israel would be avoided. He told Khan English News that the strike damaged Israel's deterrence.
Was this attack by Iran pre-coordinated?
Well, you know, the pre-coordination is a general word, and I have to explain it. we're not talking here about any conspiracy. We are talking about the fact that there were exchanges in the recent weeks, since April 1st, when Zahedi, who by Iran's own testimony was the mastermind of the Gaza war, when after he died, began exchanges between the United States and Iran through Oman. And the exchanges were about the kind of reaction to what Israel did in executing him. Now, the Iranians wanted to do something to retrieve their deterrence or honor or whatever.
Right.
And it was clear that they want to do something, and I guess that the United States tried to limit it in some way. Now, the interesting thing is this. It was a petition of a typical story that happened 4 years ago after the killing of Soleimani, the Quds Force commander.
Right.
Also, in January of 2020, they wanted to do something in reaction, and the United States allowed them, unfathomable that it may sound. The United States allowed them to attack an American base in Ain al-Assad. Of course, conditionally, that no one will be hurt, and you can have control of it. What happened? The base commanders got a message in advance. It was delivered to them through the Iraqis. It was delivered to them through channels. And they prepared for it. And there are commanders of the Colonel Stacy Coleman and another officer, Wesley Flores, and they talked about the pre-coordination. They knew it's coming. They prepared for it. They evacuated part of the people. Even President Trump told the story, and we quoted him, how he realized that they want to do it, and basically America allowed it.
Okay.
It's inconceivable, but yes, it happened. It's all said. And they shot 16 missiles. Trump says, they told us, don't hit us. We are going to do that without hitting you.
Okay.
It will be out of the perimeter. And it happened, and not one drop of blood was spilled.
And you think the same thing repeated itself this time?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't want to underestimate in any way the formidable work of the American Air Force, Israel's Air Force, the British Air Force, the Jordanian, all of them did a great job, but they had pre-knowledge of where and when and how and what kind of... They declared it, apart from the messages through Oman, they said it on media and the media. And it's not very, but relatively easy to focus your efforts
at
defending when you know all these details. And indeed, 300 drones, missiles, cruise, and ballistic and all were shot at Israel, and not, as I say, not a tail of a cat was hurt. Now, this is not to undermine the work of those who defended it, of course, but it's easier, it's doable when you know enough of what's coming.
Well,
and also the type of all these drones that fly 8 hours, my God, 8 hours on the way, and then even the cruise missiles. I was joking with friends that when the cruise missiles that take 12 minutes, 13 minutes from Tehran to Tel Aviv apparently stopped on the way for refreshment. They never came. It took them time. And Eilat, every Israeli knows Eilat. Drones were spotted over Aqaba on their way to Eilat. Mm. Come on, this is the same neighborhood. It takes 2 minutes. What is it on their way to Eilat? Wow. They never blew up in Eilat. Nothing like that happened.
Welcome to the Middle East. That's how things work, right?
Well, but we are talking about America to allow them to attack your own base. I mean, and Israel was not part of this.
Israel was not part of the coordination, as far as you can tell.
But it could. But it got. I'm sure also Jordan was not part of it. Maybe not even Britain. But they all got the information from America, and this information was very helpful. But what happened here? Indeed, I said to friends at night when I realized that this was happening, I said, we will get a demand from America not to react. Mm-hmm. Because no one was injured. No one was hurt. Why react? President Biden said, we defended you. Don't drag us into a war now. We have done our job and no one was hurt. Indeed, no one was hurt, but our deterrence was hurt. This was done over our head, mm-hmm. behind our back, defending us. That's the game of Ain al-Assad. No one was hurt. I mean, there was a shock, but not one drop of blood. But the deterrence was hurt. So next time, there won't be such a thing. The worst of all, Arya, is that people will think that this is all that Iran can do. And that is a dangerous, very dangerous assumption. No, they can do so much more. This was done in pre-coordination. Right. They can do more.
Well, one question. I mean, you say that Israel's deterrence was sold out to save Iran's deterrence. I mean, Iran has built itself deterrence now, hasn't it?
Of course. That's the tragedy. No one was hurt in Israel, but our deterrence, which seems to be a concept more than a living soul. No living soul was. By the way, there was a living soul, a girl, Bedouin, an Israeli girl, but it was not from an attack missile. It was from a defense.
Interceptor hit her, shrapnel.
Interceptor, yes, and not from the. So this deterrence is very meaningful, very serious thing. And what we have to make sure that we don't think that this is all they can do and it's manageable.
Do you think you have your hand on the pulse of what's going on in the Middle East, the former intelligence officer and memory head? Do you think Israel should respond? Is here an image here that has to be protected?
It's not an image. Deterrence is a very meaningful element in a conflict. Of course we should. We have to retrieve our deterrence. We cannot leave it like that. And at some point now the Americans are demanding not to drag them into. They demanded it even before everything happened. General Kurila, the commander of CENTCOM, came before and said, coordinate with us everything, namely don't do before anything began. All the information came from America. It's coming in 24 hours, 48 hours. All was from America. They had the no knowledge about what's coming. And it is great that no one was hurt. It's fantastic. 99% of success. You know, this is from the movies, 99%. But deterrence has to be retrieved. You know, without this pre-coordination, I don't think that the Iranians would dare to do it.
Really?
Don't think so.
Do you think that the opposite could happen, that if Israel does have a retaliatory strike, it would be coordinated as well?
With Israel?
With Iran. Just so...
No. Israel to the...
Both countries can climb down from the tree.
No. They want to finish us off, and then that's not something to work on. Just the terms. But I want to say about that, had there not been pre-coordination, I don't think that Iran would have done it, because Iran doesn't want war. Mm-hmm. That's why they did everything to avoid war.
Interesting.
They are afraid of us, and for very good reasons. They should worry about our reaction. And for good reason and serious reasons, they have to worry of us. And this is, by the way, a direct attack is not their way. Their way is through proxies.
Right.
The brazen attack is out of their strategy because they were able to pre-coordinate.
Yigal Carmon, president and founder of Memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute, and a former colonel in the IDF intelligence. As the war cabinet weighs Israel's possible response to Iran's aerial attack, retired Navy commander Dr. Eyal Pinko says that Israel should act in a manner that is smart, not right. In remarks in a briefing hosted by the Jerusalem Press Club, Pinko, a senior research fellow at the Begin Sadat Center of Strategic Studies and a researcher and lecturer in intelligence, cyber, national security, and maritime security, said Iran's direct attack on Israel was abnormal and a strong counterstrike raised regional escalations.
This is totally abnormal behavior of Iran, because the Iranian doctrine, the Iranian philosophy is what we call a non-contact warfare or indirect warfare. And it means that Iran is not fighting directly with its enemies. Iran sending someone else to die, to sacrifice himself as Hamas, as Hezbollah, as I said, the Yemen Houthis. And the way that Iran was directly firing missiles and drones towards Israel, this is totally abnormal behavior of Iran in this manner.
So turning over to the Israeli side, how do you think Israel views this situation strategically? Of course, Israel was able to intercept most of the projectiles, as well as the allies that participated in the efforts as well. What do you think is going on right now in Jerusalem in terms of, you know, the next steps ahead and what strategy it should be taking?
There are many assessments of what is going to happen. There are many voices inside the Israeli government saying that Israel should react against the Iranian attack. If we need to maybe to adjust or remember 2 weeks ago, Iranian highly ranked general was killed in a building near the embassy. I spoke yesterday with many people from foreign media. They told me, yes, but Israel hit an embassy. So the answer is no. First, Israel didn't take any responsibility for the assassination of this general, and he was not stayed in any kind of embassy. He was near the embassy. So the reaction from Iran came as a retaliation for this killing of the general. And as I said, in Jerusalem, there are many voices calling to react, because if we understand the cultural point of view of Iran, Iran understand that after this kind of attack, even though 99% of the projectiles and were destructed, even though Iran see this kind of operation as a huge success, it doesn't matter, because let's say that 50 or 60% were intercepted in Iraq and in Syria. The other were intercepted in the Israeli borders. There was one projectile that fell in Air Force Base, causing almost no damages. But from the Iranian perspective, this is a victory. This is not something which is a failure. And then now, people want to escalate the situation in order to show Iran that they cannot do whatever they want. I do believe that because of the U.S. aid and the British as well, the pressure on Israel will be such as not to react at all. Israel is ready to react, but I think nothing will happen. This is my own belief, even though I'm always saying that in the Middle East, you can always forecast the past. You cannot forecast the future. So I think that the next day or two, everyone here is very under huge tension. I do believe there is no, if there will be something, it will be in a very soft way, something like a cyber attack or something like that. There will be no, from my assessment for now, and some kind of kinetic reaction.
If you're looking at it from an Iranian point of view, from the point of view of the Islamic Republic, can Israel afford not to react in a way that will deter them? Israel lost quite a bit of deterrence on the 7th of October. Is this not one of the considerations that should be taken when the country was under direct attack from Iran for the very first time?
Yeah, there is always like we drive on the road and we say it's better to be smart than to be right. I think the right way to go ahead is to attack Iran, to show the deterrence, to bring back the deterrence as we do with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is attacking, we are attacking back and all. I think in this situation now, it will not be the right way to go. I think it's not good to do that. It's not smart way to do the things. Because first we need to remember that the IDF is still in the Gaza Strip. There are plans to go into Rafah to eliminate Hamas military capabilities, which I think it's much more important for the Israeli security, the tactical and strategical point of view. So now to go to escalate it and to go back to Iran, because I don't think it will be smart, because Iran will react again and it will become like an avalanche. I think we don't need it now in the Israeli situation. We understand if it will go there, Hezbollah will join much harder into this game, and I think it will open a global campaign. Because US and the UK will not stand aside, France as well, and this from the other side, Russia and China, and it will become a situation that I think the world cannot afford itself now. And in this manner, I think that we should be smart and not right.
One reporter is asking about the participation of other states, including Jordan itself. We saw those pictures of Jordanian pilots even taking part. Do you think this is something that will impact Iran's ability to, be the large player in the area that it intends to be within the Muslim world? What should we be making out of this participation of moderate Sunni states or otherwise?
Yes. First, I would like to say that I was totally surprised from the Jordanian act. I think that it comes from two sides. The first one, Jordan is pretty much depends on the US, and most of the Jordanian military equipment and platforms are American platforms. And this is something that I believe that the US came and told the Jordanian king to move forward with that to help Israel. Secondly, if you see what is happening in Jordan, Iran in the last few years, especially in the last year, is trying to involve in what is happening in Jordan. Iran is trying to mess up with social media, with the Palestinian over there in Jordan, and trying to shuffle the cards inside Jordan. The king understands it well. So even though the king is on the media, is speaking about the East Jerusalem and Gaza Strip and all, he is afraid of what is happening inside his country. But you see that below the shadows, once again, we go there, that below the shadows, the cooperation between Israel and Jordan is a very good cooperation in the economical world, in the military intelligence. So the connections, the ties are very strong. And also, Jordan is also worried about the Iranian involvement as a Sunni country against the Shia. And we also, if we look on a broader aspect, what is happening within Hamas and Israel, we are only players on the chessboard. And the chessboard between, I will say, two dimensions. One is the dimension of the war between the West and East, the bloc, the Russian, Chinese, Iranian, North Korea, and Pakistan in the bloc, with the other bloc, which is European and NATO. This is one dimension. And the second dimension is the war in between the Islam, which is between the Shia countries led by Iran and the Sunni countries as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, UAE, Jordan, and Morocco. And you see the Abraham Accords, which brought prosperity to the region and peace to the region until the murderous Hamas attack on October 7. So I think this is also part of this multidimensional war between the East and West and the Islam.
Retired Navy Commander Dr. Eyal Pinko. Now here's Arik Einstein in his song Ach Milat Mafteach, the key word.
כשנתתי לך שעה לי נתת את חיי כשנתתי לך דמעה את נתת לי חיוך ושכחתי את ימי לפנייך לפניי אך איך קולי נהנה אך איזה קסם בינינו מונח אך כמה טוב לי ורע חדר סגור שוב נפתח כשנגעתי בכתפך את קרבת את שפתיי והרעת בגופך התגבר בתוכי ועצמתי את עיניי בידייך בידך אך איך קולי נהנה אך איזה קסם בינינו מונח אך כמה טוב לי ורע חדר סגור שוב נפתח לתאר מה שבי צומח אין מילה בתנה רק היא מילה כמילת מפתח כשאני איתן את יודעת שאני זה גם את זה גם שנינו זה בינך וזה ביני כל השאר לא חשוב והלב היה נרגש ונולדנו מחדש אך איך קולי נהנה אך איזה קסם בינינו מונח אך כמה טוב לי ורע חדר סגור שוב נפתח לתאר מה שבי צומח אין מילה בתנך אך היא מילה כמילת מפתח כשאני איזה קסם בינינו מולך אך כמה טוב לי ורע חדר סגור שוב נפתח לתאר מה שבי צומח אין מילה בתנך רק היא מילה כמילת מפתח כש
Seema Shine, head of the Iran program at the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University and former head of the Research and Evaluation Division of the Mossad, says that Iran's overt attack on Israel was unprecedented. But from a strategic perspective, the U.S.-led regional cooperation that coalesced around Israel's defense constitutes a significant defeat for Tehran. In an online briefing hosted by Media Central, Shine said Israel's ability to leverage this will depend on how and when it decides to retaliate.
The operational success was a huge one, but the strategic one is not a huge success. From the strategic point of view, it is a completely new paradigm of the Iranians. They have decided to launch a war against Israel. There is no other word than to use it as a war, because it is an attack on Israel that has never happened before in the last 3-4 decades. The last time that Israel was attacked from the outside was by Saddam Hussein 91 during the war, and it was, if I remember correctly, 2,000-3,000 of rockets without casualties. So this is a completely new event in the dimension of it, and as well as the fact that Iran, for the first time, decided to attack Israel. So without putting it in any the contrast between this the operational success and the strategic, I would say, for the time being, we don't know, it's not over yet, but for the time being, the strategic consequences are much less than the operational one. I'm trying to just to put a finger on some, to point some important elements. And one is that the event has, and the decision of Iran to attack, not that it was a surprise to Israel, it wasn't a surprise. Iran was saying it was going to retaliate. The Israeli intelligence had a lot of information before, so it wasn't in any way a surprise to Israel. At the same time, the decision of Iran to do it means is very interesting on the background of the American attitude, the fact that the President Biden has tried to prevent this. President Biden and the whole administration have tried to prevent this attack directly, talking to the Iranians via mediators, and also asking other parties in Europe as well as in the region to talk to the Iranians. It didn't work. And Iran, in a way, it is a decision on the side of Iran to ignore the any deterrence that they could believe could come from the U.S. Probably it is based on the assumption in Tehran that the U.S. doesn't want a war, and the U.S. will not, and it will be dependent on the success of the event. I think the Iranians took into consideration the fact that Israel has a very, very strong multi-layer anti-missile system. And they probably took into consideration that there will be not too many casualties. If I can compare it to anything in the past, I think it's in a way comparable to the Soleimani assassination, and then the response of the Iranians that also responded in a heavily way, but at the same time made all the needed steps in order to make sure that there will be no casualties on the American side, and it will be able, and both sides will be able to close the event. And I think this is the basis of the Iranian assumption that brought them to decide to do this attack, thinking that we have killed the people in Damascus, they will retaliate, and if there are no too many casualties, it will be completed. Both sides have done what they've done. I don't think Israel sees it this way. The big question is what Israel will do. Not that I know what Israel will do, I don't know, but if I can recommend, I would say to Israel, wait and think. There is the automatic response that everybody would like to do and to show Iran what Israel can do, but I think it has to be thought carefully, because I do think we should retaliate, but I think what will be important and successful is if Iran If the end of this event, and it's not just this event, it's in the context of Gaza war and of the half year that we are fighting with Gaza, with Hezbollah, the Houthis in Iraq and everyone. So it's part of the regional war that the multi-front, as we call it, multi-front war that we are in. I think the strategic failure of Iran could be if this, what we saw during yesterday night, the regional cooperation led by the U.S. Supporting Israel to protect itself. I think this is the nightmare of Iran if it succeeds to be the outcome of the war in Gaza and the attack of Iran. I'm sure Israel will be able in the future to retaliate in Iran in a different way. We have a lot of capabilities, and I think it will be much more devastating for the Iranians if Israel succeeded, and Israel has to contribute to that in order that it will work, succeed to change the architecture of the Middle East in a way that will be understood that Iran is with its proxies, but all the others are actually cooperating against Iran and its proxies. So I think I'm sure these ideas are coming up also in the cabinet when they are dealing with how to retaliate. But God knows who, if people have the, you know, Israel is so stretched in the last half year that the question is whether Israel, the leadership in Israel will be able to decide to wait and they have, as the Iranians are calling, a strategic revenge and not just an operational attack. I think this is the position of the American administration. Biden has said it quite openly. There are leaks coming out of Washington that the president has demanded Israel not to retaliate and, of course, not to do anything without consultation with the American administration. So I think we are in a situation after last night that was a real dramatic change of everything we knew before, but still the outcome of this event allows Israel to think and not to retaliate immediately, and I do hope that will happen.
Seema Shine, head of the Iran program at the Institute for National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University. John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, says Israel's response to Iranian attacks must be disproportionate in order to restore its deterrence. In a CNN interview, Bolton suggested an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities.
But once we see what the damage is, I think it's incumbent on Israel and the United States to reestablish deterrence in a major way. And I think that means, by definition, Israel's response, and there should be a response, should not be proportionate. It should be far stronger, because when deterrence fails, to reestablish it, you have to teach the adversary that any gain they may hope to get by any future attack will be more than outweighed by the damage that will be caused.
I was just sorry for interrupting, but give us your assessment of an appropriate Israeli response to what Iran has now done.
Well, what Iran did tonight that I think was most significant was the firing of ballistic missiles and cruise missiles from its territory directly at Israel. Almost certainly at this point, none of those missiles contained a nuclear warhead. But you never can tell when the next firing, the next salvo of ballistic missiles might contain a nuclear warhead. So I think among the many targets Israel should consider, this is the opportunity to destroy Iran's nuclear weapons program. And I hope President Biden is not trying to dissuade Prime Minister Netanyahu from doing that. And if he succeeds, and if at some future point the Ayatollahs are able to pull off what former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon called a nuclear holocaust, history will know who to blame.
So it was, just to be precise, Ambassador Bolton, you're recommending that Israel launch an airstrike to try to destroy whatever nuclear capabilities the Iranians might have. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. I think they should go after the nuclear fuel cycle activities that are well known. Their locations are well known. And I think that would be the appropriate target, because right now Iran has demonstrated it is not restrained by any concern about a direct attack on Israeli territory from its attack. It has, by its own admission, fired ballistic and cruise missiles. And the only thing that has saved Israel is this amazing technology. Next time, if the attacks come from a different location, containing nuclear warheads, Israel might not be so lucky. This is not time to play academic games and message and signal. This is a question of power. People say they're concerned about a wider war. The wider war began on October the 7th. That was not an Israeli war against Arabs or Palestinians or Gazans. It was Iran's attack on Israel using the Ring of Fire strategy. That's the strategic environment Israel faces right now. And the main cause, the puppeteer, the puppet master, is Iran. And if you take away their nuclear capability, that would be a dramatic hit to the regime, maybe enough to topple it.
Ambassador, my colleague Jim Sciutto is here with me in Washington. He has a question, he has a follow-up question for you. Go ahead, Jim.
Ambassador Bolton, given, and you know as well as we do, that Hezbollah and its enormous missile arsenal, many thousands of rockets and missiles, is intended in part by Iran to be a pressure point if Israel were to strike Iranian nuclear facilities. And I wonder, given the size of that, an order of magnitude bigger than it was, say, during the 2006 war, whether you believe Israel can today fight what would be a multi-front war, Gaza in the south, Hezbollah in the north, Iran to the east, and if you would then envision the U.S. directly involved in such a conflict.
Well, I think for the foreseeable future, Gaza is not going to be a principal battlefield, and it's certainly not something that's going to engage full Israeli military power. I think Hezbollah put pressure on Iran. It's one reason why the Iranian counterstrike took almost 2 weeks after the Damascus strike by Israel to say, you need to put skin in this game, Iran. So I'm not at all sure what Hezbollah's response would be to Israel taking out a nuclear power that hasn't done a thing for Hezbollah. The Israelis clearly have thought about what to do to neutralize Hezbollah. Perhaps their response, which also would be a pretty big problem for Iran, would be to go after Hezbollah now. My point is there are a number of steps Israel can take. Passivity at this point for Israel would be a big mistake. I mean, from the Israeli point of view, they should remember what Winston Churchill said in World War II. Without victory, there is no survival.
John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. That's our show for this evening. I'm Ariel O'Sullivan, wishing you a Shavua Tov, and we leave you with this song, Ben Ha'ir V'Hapardes, Between the City and the Orchard by Tuna.
צהל נכנס לעזה, נסעתי קצת לאבא על רקע צ'קה לקה, פקה פקה, מדה זקה חוזה נגמר שזה סימן שנסיים את הסגה ואין לי גג שזה סימן שבטח אין לי קרקע וגם אין לי מוטיבציה וגם אין לי מצב רוח כאילו לא מספיק מתוח, נכנסים לעוד ויכוח אז אין מקום אחד כרגע, אין מקום בטוח כמו מאוכזב מהעולם, מרגיש שאין פיקוח כמו מאוכזב מהעולם, דירקתי את האירוח מה היה להם כל כך דחוף לי גוס מעט תפוח מי בכלל מת על שינוי לא אני חורף בא אני בנדודי לא אני סופרסטאר הומלס קרניבור צמחוני מהבית להורים משם לאיירבי-אנבי בין העיר לפרדס בדרכים תחת אש לאן תשוב הרוח זה עוד אפשר לנחש שהעתיד עוד מטושטש אז הרף הזה מוקדש לכל מי שכמוני מחפש לכל מי שצריך מסלול חדש ותקוע בבירות בגלל השיבושים בווייז
מה שנשאר זה לחבר את מה שנשאר מאחור
מכות אליו נעים לי לחזור
יאו וכמו שעל המייק אני נמנוח בינינו עדיין מנסה בכוח כאב מדי לראות הבית פה הוא רק קירות הופעות גדולות מאוד היה לאן לברוח רק שהכל עצר אני הקלתי מה עברתי לאט לאט הפכתי לאחד שלא הכרתי נעלמתי לעצמי כדי שלא יחב לך כדי שלא יחב לי כן זה מאוד רומנטי הלב נשבר אבל הגיע הזמן הזה שהבחר בי הבית רק עכשיו כמו שסלם הרק מברבי בית 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 ב